From NPR News in Washington, D.C., a special rebroadcast of the second presidential candidate debate between Senator Barack Obama and Senator John McCain. I'm Linda Wertheimer, and joining me now is NPR's national political correspondent, who is at Belmont University, the site of tonight's debate in Nashville. Mara, how did you think they did tonight? What's your assessment?
Well, you know, I've been thinking about that, and there wasn't any one moment that really leapt out. Sometimes in these town hall meetings, one of the questions can throw someone for a loop or elicit a kind of off-the-mark answer, and I don't think either of them made any big mistakes. I think one of the big questions for McCain going into this, well, there are two questions. One is, could he show that he gets it, that he actually can identify with the economic problems of ordinary people? The economy has been really hurting him in this campaign, and I think he did a pretty good job of that. He even came up with a new plan. Usually people don't announce new plans in the midst of a town hall forum, but he announced a plan to stabilize home values. But also, could he attack Obama without looking mean or angry? And I think he did a pretty good job of sticking to stubs, and so did Obama. There was a lot of back and forth on taxes and health care and energy, a lot of detail, a lot of kind of in-the-weeds talk. But they both held their own, and it didn't strike me. My feeling is it didn't really change the dynamic of this race, but it definitely showcased big, big differences on domestic policy and, again, on foreign policy. A lot of the ground we've been over in other debates, but it was put into sharp relief tonight.
I wonder if a lot of that, sort of going into detail about what you voted against and what I voted for and that kind of detail, which we hear a lot of in these kinds of meetings. Does that, I don't know that that illuminates much about, how we feel about these two candidates.
I agree with you. When I was listening to this, I was saying, wow, I think voters, especially in a forum like this, want somebody who's going to answer the question and tell them very specifically what they're going to do. There was a woman who asked a question of, do you think healthcare should be a commodity? That's a pretty straightforward question. And neither of them answered her yes or no. Both of them obviously believe it should be because they're not talking about dismantling the privately delivered healthcare system. There were a lot of moments like that where they kind of launched into recycled speech chunks from their stump speeches. And I'm really interested in seeing voters' reaction to this debate because I think that none of them had that wonderful moment where they could cut through all of that stuff and say something about the economic problems that really perhaps made it clear to people what exactly we're going through now.
Mara, quickly, did you have any sense of what the audience in the hall was feeling or reacting as this debate went on?
It's hard to tell. You know,
they hardly made a sound.
They hardly made a sound. They were instructed not to make a sound. And, of course, when John McCain makes jokes about how he might need a hair transplant, when there's not a laugh from the audience, it kind of falls flat. But they were instructed not to make a sound. Of course, there was the one moment with the chief petty officer where McCain shook his hand and kind of had a private exchange with him. But no, there was not a sense. I watched their faces. I was trying to see if people were bored or frowning, and it was very, very hard to tell what they felt. Of course, reporters are going to be, I suppose, trying to get to these people after the debate, just like a jury, just like they would with a jury, to see how they reacted.
Okay, Mara, thanks very much. We're going to come back now to the studios in Washington. Mara is at Belmont University in Nashville, Tennessee, where she has, where she is now going to be spun, I assume, by all the candidates' representatives who want to tell the press what they think really happened. And here in the studio with me, we have Matt Continetti, who writes for the Weekly Standard, E.J. Dionne, who is a columnist for the Washington Post and a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. Joining us from NPR West is Farai Chadeh, who is the host of NPR's News and Notes, and Ron Elving, NPR senior Washington editor, is sitting right beside me. So, Ron, what do you think happened?
I was struck by, right from the beginning, the questions were about the economy. They sometimes verged off into talking about entitlements or health insurance, but always back to one central theme, one central anxiety, and that was, what are you going to do if you become president in a few months to relieve the pain of our economic present and to restore our faith in our economic future? And of course, the candidates, as has been observed, had set answers. They were ready for this one, if you will, and they gave those set answers to some degree over and over, and they tried to take their jabs at each other. But this was not a format in which you could really go wholesale on the attack against your opponent, because you had to respond to these heartfelt questions penned, in each case, by real people who were sitting right in front of you and making eye contact and begging to be answered.
You can't. I think that's correct, that it puts a lot of constraint on a person, to on a candidate. You know, that's one thing to be. It's one thing to be to ignore a question that's asked by one of us. Reporters, you know, are expendable, but these are voters, and to be seen to be dissing a voter just cannot be a good thing. Matt Continetti, we had a lot of kind of, you know, what is going to happen to me questions. What is the fastest way to take care of older people? What is this bailout actually going to do for ordinary people like me? How can we trust either one of you with our money? You know, these are all. I suppose that there's some. You know, there was a selection process here, but these are all kind of taking the economy personally questions.
Oh, and it's clearly the subject of, you know, the center of so many Americans' concerns. The economy has emerged as the overwhelmingly most important issue in the mind of voters going into this election. And that, of course, really favors Barack Obama, whom American voters, according to opinion polls, trust on the economy more than they do John McCain. I was struck, though, by a few moments in this debate, which I thought may have found more fascinating in some ways than some of the audience, who looked like they were about to fall asleep as we watched on television, where McCain, in trying to make the case for himself, was almost making the case for Obama. Two examples. One, McCain kept mentioning his hero, Ronald Reagan. He also mentioned his hero, TR, but he kept mentioning his hero, Ronald Reagan. And yet at the end of the debate, in the closing moments, it was Barack Obama making the Reaganite case, the case that Ronald Reagan made in the 1980 election. Are you better off? And Obama said, what has happened in these past 8 years? Well, your wages have gone down. Your incomes have gone down. You have this economic crisis. You have this sense of crisis geopolitically. It was Obama making the Reagan case, not really McCain. The other part where McCain was weirdly making the case for Obama was when he kept referring to having the steady hand of government, having a calm demeanor in charge of the apparatus of the state. Well, I think one problem for McCain's campaign over these last few weeks has been McCain's initial response to the financial crisis, which was so erratic. You know, saying in one moment, the fundamentals are strong. Then hours later saying, no, it's a mess. Going around the country, suspending his campaign, flying back to Washington. Maybe the bill improved as a result. Maybe it didn't. Saying he would fire the chairman of the SEC. He couldn't. It was Obama who was actually that steady hand during the financial crisis. So an interesting turn of events here in the debate.
E.J. Dionne, do you think that either one of them took a great leap forward?
Well, I think that the person who needed to shake this race up was John McCain. The trend ever since this financial crisis broke has been in favor of Barack Obama. He's gone ahead in states like Ohio that are absolutely essential for McCain. And I don't think McCain shook the race up. I agree entirely with Matt's points there. I was struck a phrase that McCain used, you need a cool hand on the tiller. Interesting metaphor. And that's been Obama's argument. The very interesting thing here, there was a lot of speculation that to shake the race up, McCain was really going to go at Obama on very personal things. Sarah Palin, his running mate, has been going after Bill Ayers, the member of the Weather Underground, whom Obama knows. And yet it would have been totally out of place to do it in this debate. And you can't blame the Weather Underground for blowing up this economy. And so McCain actually had to get himself back in the economic discussion. One of McCain's aides said a few days ago that the campaign was looking forward to turning a page on this financial crisis. It is quite obvious that there is no way you can turn a page on this financial crisis in the campaign. So to the extent, as everyone has said, that this debate reinforce the economic issue in the election. And the economic issue has been working for Obama very strongly. I think that the debate is at best a tie for McCain, which is, again, like the last debate, a kind of victory for Obama.
Well, now, we're going to, when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about some of the foreign policy issues that were raised and the discussion about Russia and Israel and so on. But right now, I want to just fact check some of the domestic policy questions. Jim Zeroli, who is in, I believe, New York. Jim Zeroli standing by. Jim, Senator McCain talked a lot about Senator Obama raising taxes. He mentioned a secret plan to raise taxes on small businesses. Tell us what you think is really going on there.
Well, I think Senator McCain said something like Obama has a secret plan to increase taxes on 50% of small business revenue. I think that may be true if you look at revenue, because, you know, the richest small business owners would pay proportionally more. I don't think that's the same thing as saying that 50% of small business owners will pay more in taxes, which I don't think is true. I also think Senator Obama said at one point that he was cutting taxes but also cutting spending more. I think it should be pointed out that, you know, most independent experts who have studied the tax plans of the two candidates say that, you know, the plans would substantially increase the deficit, the federal deficit in both cases. Neither will be able to cut taxes without, you know, spending a lot less than they say they want to spend.
Let me just say that we have been fact checking the candidates in real time tonight with the aid of people like Jim Zeroli, and you can see this fact check information on our blog at npr.org/voxpolitics. If you want to look that up, Julie Robner is also here. She's been covering the health issue, and the candidates are pretty rough on each other's health plans, Julie Robner. Senator Obama accused Senator McCain's plan of basically amounting to a tax increase.
Yes, he did. He basically said, now, Senator McCain liked to talk about his $5,000 tax credit, which itself was a little bit of an exaggeration. It's only $5,000 for families. It's $2,500 for individuals. But Senator Obama used the phrase, you know, what one hand giveth, the other taketh away, by pointing out that Senator McCain would, for the first time, tax the value of employer-provided health insurance, and implied that that would be a wash for most people. In fact, at least at the beginning, for most people, they would be better off, that the tax credit would be larger than the amount you would pay in taxes on the health insurance that you get from your employer, with the exception of people who get very, very generous benefits. And, of course, that might include a lot of people, you know, union members who have for years traded off higher wages for better health benefits. But that notwithstanding, most people would be better off, perhaps down the line, since that tax credit would only go up with the regular cost of living as opposed to the cost of health care later on. That tax credit might not be worth so much. But at least at the beginning, that tax credit was going to be worth well more than the tax bill that you would have to pay.
So was Senator Obama unfair to Senator McCain?
Momentarily.
But the other thing I was interested in is that the $5,000 tax credit, you say that it's actually $5,000 per family unit, not for individuals?
It's $5,000 if you are buying insurance as a family, and $2,500 if you're buying insurance as an individual. Now, this is only... It's very useful if you are already getting insurance from your employer. If you're going to go out, if you don't get insurance and you have to go out and buy insurance yourself with that tax credit, it may not be so valuable, because it's pretty tough to go out and buy insurance on the open market for $2,500 as an individual or $5,000 as a family, if the average plan costs more like $4,000 for an individual and more like $12,000 for a family. So Senator McCain seems pretty confident that there's going to be plans out there, but at the moment there are plans, but they have really big deductibles, like $5,000 or $10,000, or really large copays. So that's still an issue.
Thanks very much, Jim Zeroli, Julie Robner, who've been checking facts along the way tonight. And as I said, take a look at our blog, npr.org/voxpolitics, for still more checking on details. Now, coming back to the studio in Washington and to our studio in California, Farai today. I skipped you in the first go-round, so if you want to say something about domestic policy, now is your chance. Or if you'd like to go straight on through to the discussion of foreign policy, that would be fine, too.
I'll just hit a couple quick points, one on each. One of them is AIG, and there were hearings on Capitol Hill today.
The big insurance company.
Yes. And basically, as the bailout was being debated after it was passed, they had this huge $400,000-plus conference at which there were apparently many snacks consumed, many pedicures gotten. And that was the first thing pretty much that came up in the debate was Senator Obama said the Treasury should demand that money back and those executives should be fired. And this has got people fired up on the blogs. In the blogosphere, people are circulating viral video of what went on Capitol Hill. So I guess we folks who cover politics are truly in our element when people are willing to put Capitol Hill testimony at the front of the YouTube line. But also, I think that the discussion about the evil empire was interesting. You know, is Russia, modern Russia, an evil empire? And I think both candidates handled that deftly and in some ways sidestepped it. But I thought that Senator McCain's answer was actually quite on point, because he deconstructed the question and said, well, if I said yes, then it would be interpreted this way. If I said no, it would be interpreted this way. What he said was maybe, and that maybe was conditional on what the president and the government did.
It was my impression that one of the most successful moments in this debate for John McCain were, as you would absolutely expect them to be, on foreign policy and national security. How do you think he did on that? Matt Continetti?
Well, when the first foreign policy question arrived, there was almost joy in McCain's face. He was so happy that this finally was shifting onto ground onto which he is stronger than Obama. And Republicans continue, actually, despite the Bush presidency, to enjoy advantages when it comes to national security in terms of how voters perceive the two parties. Unfortunately, this is not, unfortunately for the Republicans, I should say, this is not a foreign policy election. This is an economic policy election. And even on foreign policy, I don't think McCain performed as well as he might have. I have to disagree with Farai. I think he dodged the question by deconstructing it. I thought Obama's answer was stronger, which is that, well, they're not evil necessarily, but some of the things they're doing in Russia are evil. I think that's a fair answer. Also, McCain refused to engage the debate on whether it was right to topple Saddam Hussein's government. Now, he believes that it was right to do so. Joe Biden believed it was right to do so at the time, or that we should use force against Saddam Hussein. When Obama says that for McCain the Iraq War really begins in 2007, that was correct tonight. He didn't go back to defend that initial vote, that initial line of argument. And he didn't make the case that the world would be a far more dangerous place now if Saddam Hussein and his sons were still running Iraq and you had an arms race between Iraq and Iran. He didn't make that case, and so I think he really ceded a huge amount of ground to Obama tonight.
You know, I was really struck by the same thing, in that McCain did not seem to be going out of his way to look hawkish or to make Obama look too dovish. I thought his answer, I expected him to give a much tougher answer to Tom Brokaw's question about is Russia an evil empire, and he decided to pass. What he said wasn't necessarily wrong. It just was not the answer you would expect him to give in arguing with Barack Obama when he has tried to make his toughness on foreign policy a great asset. But probably the most important thing about the foreign policy debate is it came two-thirds to three-quarters of the way through in this debate, suggesting how low foreign policy is going to be as a voting issue on Election Day.
Well, we're looking at polls which show that the Iraq War, that 9% of the American people consider the Iraq War to be an important issue in this debate.
And another 300 points off the market, it'll go down to 7. It'll go down in tandem with the market, I think.
Those same polls were also showing that most people still oppose the decision to go into Iraq, and that could have everything to do with why John McCain decided not to go back and defend his position on that.
Well, now, we've talked about John McCain, whose strength is, I think we all sort of agree that John McCain was the moving force, or the potentially moving force in this debate, that he needed to do things in this debate. He needed to make progress make the case for his candidacy. But what about Obama? How do you think Obama did on the foreign policy side, which is not, strictly speaking, his strength?
I thought he came out rather strong on the Iran question in particular, and he said, we're not going to take the military options off the table. And for a moment, he sounded almost truculent. He sounded almost as though he wanted to be the tough guy on foreign policy. And of course, he didn't have to explain his position about sitting down and talking with the leaders of hostile countries the way he's had to do in the past. He wasn't put on the defensive on that question the way he was in the first debate. So I think he had an opportunity here in that answer and in some of his answers on some of the earlier questions to be that steady hand, to seem to be the more confident of the two, the more at ease, both with the format, which is supposed to be, of course, the format that John McCain wanted, the town hall format, but at ease with the people he was talking to and at ease with some of the ideas of things he might have to do as president.
It could
and he
be,
also, I think, got a zinger in when he Senator McCain was taking him to task for saying what he would do about Pakistan, and Senator Obama defended himself, saying, this is the guy who's saying bomb, bomb Iran, and I don't think this is an example of speaking softly. So he was able to, you know, take what was a jab against him and turn it around in that instance. And there was definitely, you know, there has been for some time this idea that Senator Obama is the worst of the two candidates when it comes to debating. But I think he's been, you know, holding his own over the course of what we've seen so far.
You know, it could be that John McCain went into this debate not to shake up the race, but to solve the problem many have said he has, which is that he doesn't look calm and steady. And he did look calm in this debate, but that's not something that changes the direction of a race. But maybe he sees it opening up an opportunity for him later on.
This has been a very interesting discussion of a very interesting debate, and I want to thank all of you for being here. E.J. Dionne, Matt Continetti, Ron Elving, and Julie Rovner here with me in the studio. Mara Liasson, NPR's national political correspondent, was at Belmont University in Nashville. Jim Zeroli in New York, thank you very much as well. The presidential debates next move north to Hofstra University in Hempstead, New York. It will be the last time Senators Barack Obama and John McCain face off in front of a national audience. Tune in on Wednesday, October 15th, for the final presidential candidate debate of 2008. I'm Linda Wertheimer. You've been listening to live coverage of the 2008 presidential debate between Senators John McCain and Barack Obama. This is NPR News.